one thing from another, as truth from falsehood, virtue from vice, acuteness of judgment, power or perceiving differences of things or ideas, in their relations and tendencies. The errors of youth often proceed from the want of discernment. So what I just read to you was the definition of the word discernment that I have. I'm not expecting you to remember all of those words, but for you to kind of get a little bit of a handle on the word. Discernment is something that I feel like that we all need. It's something that we need when we're going to buy a used car. It's something we need when we're going to buy a house. Something we need when we are entering into relationships with other people. It might be for business and it might be for a personal relationship. I would highly recommend, if we had teenagers here this morning that were contemplating entering into a relationship with someone as far as a long-term relationship, I would advise them to pray for discernment. You don't want to enter into a long-term commitment such as marriage with someone that is not very compatible to who you are. And not that they have to be just like you. I mean, we know a lot of people say opposites kind of attract, and you know, we're here to, as husband and wife, to kind of balance one another out. But there's a level of discernment that we ought to have. Marriage is a very binding agreement that we enter into on this earth, and it needs to be one that we find a long-term blessing and not something that is causes us to have issues or problems in life. So I'd like to look into this word discernment, and I'll begin here this morning by reading you some verses from the book of Proverbs. I'm going to read set from several different places, and I've just copied them into some notes I have here, and I just want to read through them quickly. And I want you to notice that there's a phrase that occurs in every one of these, and it's the phrase void of understanding. And I want us to recognize the things that's associated with being void of understanding. In Proverbs 7, chapter 7, verse 7, it says, "And beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a man void of understanding." Now, we have expectations that as a person gets older that they would have more understanding. I mean, that's just, we just have that expectation. But here it identifies someone that was a young man, and it says, a young man void of understanding. That seems to mean that he had less understanding than what you would expect someone of a similar age or level of maturity to have. Proverbs 10 and 13 says, "In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding." If we're void of understanding, many times we can get ourselves in a place where discipline is administered. My mother used to tell the story of visiting her grandmother when she was a little girl, and her grandmother would say, "Take care." And my mother didn't know what that meant at the time, but she found out because her grandmother gave her a swat, and "take care" meant to quit doing what she was doing. I don't know what it was, but she was doing something that her grandmother didn't approve of, and she ended up getting a swat from Grandma, and she understood then. But she was void of understanding, and there was some discipline. There was a rod of correction that came. In Proverbs 11 and 12, he says, "He that is void of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace." Many times, we can get ourselves in trouble by saying the things that pop into our mind. It would be better, it'd be wiser, if we would just refrain a little bit and consider what we're thinking before we say it. "He that tilleth," this is Proverbs 12 and 11, "he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding." So this phrase, void of understanding, is depicting someone that would follow a path of just being vain, of not being sincere, of not being real. In Proverbs 17 and 18, "A man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh surety in the presence of his friend." So there's some thing, there's some context of that verse that maybe is not really so prevalent or understandable in our language today, but "a man void of understanding striketh hands." There's some kind of agreement that is being made when there's a lack of understanding, and that never turns out well. It's like many times in my line of work, someone's one of their first questions sometimes when I realize I'm dealing with someone that has a lack of understanding is, "How much is it going to cost to fix this?" I had that happen this past week. The man asked me, "What do you think it's going to cost to fix it?" I said, "I have no idea. I haven't even heard it run. Will it run?" "Well, yes, it'll run." "Well, I don't have a clue of how serious of a repair your vehicle needs. I've got to at least hear it run. And then anything I say would just be a wild guess. I don't have any understanding. I can't lay my hand on the fender and cipher out what's wrong with it. It would be foolish for me to agree to fix your vehicle for a specific amount of money." So void of understanding, that's why it's so important. Somebody wants to sell your house to you. Somebody needs to do some inspection. Somebody needs to crawl up an attic and underneath it. Somebody needs to test the wiring. Somebody needs to test the plumbing. Maybe you've lived there they've lived there for 20 years, but you don't know you don't know if they've been having to put a siphon hose in the bathtub and drain it out the window, or you don't know. I knew a situation where when somebody moved out of a rental house, and I went in to check it out, and we run some water in the bathtub, and it took like 8 hours for the bathtub to drain. It's like, there was a family of four living here. It was the only bathtub in the house. How did they get along? You couldn't just, one person every 4 days take a bath. Surely they took baths more often than that. Did they use the same water? All of these things. I'm just saying, and when you're void of understanding, you can end up with a bad situation. That's the point I'm trying to make here. The last verse in Proverbs 24 and 30 says, "I went by the field of the slothful." What does that tell you it looked like? There's probably some weeds out there, right? There's probably some irregularities. Maybe it had never been, maybe all of the seeds didn't come up and they never went back and replanted or anything. Maybe, I don't know what it looked like, but there's a picture that comes to your mind when you say you went by the field of the slothful. And he says, "And by the vineyard of a man void of understanding." both of those places, whether it was a field of corn and a vineyard of grapes, whatever it is, when you walk by there and it gets the label, a field of the slothful and the vineyard of a man void of understanding, it doesn't look like the epitome of perfection. Would you agree? It looks, there's something that's missing there. There's a level of disrepair. There's a level of dysfunction. There's a level of underproduction that's happening, that's visible from the road when you walk by, when you drive by. It's something that you can see at a distance, and it's evidence that there's a lack of understanding there. So I'd like to take this thought of discernment, realizing that understanding is part of discernment. And a lack of discernment can also be exhibited by a lack of understanding. Discerning, it's, then the definition said, the power of perceiving differences of things or ideas and their relations and tendencies. So, I would like to turn over here to the, you can probably turn with us here. It'd take us a little while at this point in our thought. Let's go to 1 Kings 13, 13th chapter of 1 Kings here in the Old Testament. We have the account of Solomon had become king, and he had, the Lord had come to him and basically presented him some options. What would you that I would do for you? Riches, victory in battle. What would you ask for? Do you kind of like the sky's the limit? What can I do for you? The Lord presented himself to Solomon like that. So Solomon, we'll read here in 1 Kings 13, maybe verse 7. He says, "And now, O Lord, my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David, my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in." Now, I'm sure we could probably prove this with a timeline and all that, but I'm sure that Solomon was what we would consider an adult. He was probably at least 21, maybe considerably older than that. So he wasn't a little child, but he was coming, he was responding to the Lord in a humble tone of voice, in a humble manner. He said, "I'm just like a little child." And what would we expect as far as understanding and discernment from a little child? Not as much as we would from someone we'd consider an adult. Yesterday evening, Rodney helped me cut up a little. I had a tree fall over in the pasture, and I needed a little firewood for the night, and he come out and was helping me. And we picked up this tree trunk with the tractor and the front-end loader. And it was stable. We were, it wasn't like it was wobbling around or anything like that, but Matthew was out there with us, and we were watching him, and I just, so it's all clear, I think it's very good for grandpas and daddies to take their little boys with them when they're doing stuff like that. And Matthew was out there with us, and I looked up, and Matthew was walking. It was like his second trip. He was going underneath that tree trunk that is lifted up with the front end loader, and I could tell he'd made more than one lap. And I said, "Matthew, that's, you don't walk underneath that. It didn't fall, and we really weren't concerned that it would fall, but it was a cool little thing that he could walk under. I couldn't have walked under it physically, but he could, and he thought that was neat. But you don't do that. There's a reason you don't do that. So we made sure that he didn't do that anymore. And we're thankful that nothing bad happened when he walked under it. But that's just a risk you take many times raising boys. But he didn't understand. And Solomon was saying when he said, I'm just a little child. He was saying, I don't have understanding. I'm kind of void of understanding. I'm not as wise as I need to be. That's what Solomon was saying. And he said, I know not how to go out or come in. Now, let's get real. He did. He knew how to go in. He knew how to go in and out of a door. He was an adult per se. But he was talking to who? He was talking to God. And no matter how wise we are here in this world, you might be an expert in your field, but when it comes to God, I'm like a little child. I don't really know. I just barely know how to, in anything, to do some things, okay? And everything I do know, it's because the Lord helped me to do that. And I need to keep that perspective. And Solomon seemed to be in an incredibly good position here. He said, as far as I'm concerned, he was approaching this right. And he said in verse 8, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. So I'm in a very responsible place in the midst of a very large body of people. He says, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people? Who in their own ability would be wise enough and have enough of understanding to be able to make the right decisions consistently for this large body of people? Solomon was saying, I'm not there. I may have been anointed king, but I recognize I'm really kind of void of understanding. And we read all those things that seemed to follow the people that were void of understanding. You know what I think Solomon was trying to say? Lord, if you don't help me, I'm going to make a mess of this. That's what he was saying to the Lord. And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing and hast not asked thyself long life, neither hast thou asked riches for thyself, nor hast thou asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy works. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart, so that there is none like thee before thee, neither shall after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. That's quite a blessing, isn't it? Because you asked the right type of blessing, I'm going to give you some things. This is some fringe benefits. I'm going to give you over and above. So Solomon asked for the right thing. He asked for understanding. He asked for wisdom. He asked for the ability to discern what's the right thing. And Solomon historically is recognized as a very wise king of Israel. And the nation prospered during his reign like no other reign financially. And he is known for making some of the most I hate to use the word shrewd, because that implies some level of deception, I think. But he made some of the best decisions of any leader could have ever made in the place of being a king. So Solomon didn't lack an understanding or discerning judgment, did he? But although he had that, we also look down through the story of Solomon. And you could, there's various places we could read to substantiate his wealth, his honor, his dominance, his leadership. The Queen of Sheba came at one point, and she came because she'd heard these big stories. And when she came and had visited Solomon, and when she left, she said, the half hadn't even been told. I'm just completely, we would say today, blown away. That's why it was way exceeded my expectations. I think she probably came thinking that she was going to be, it was a little bit over exaggerated. I think the Queen of Sheba came thinking that really, it can't be what everybody else says it really is. And when she left, it was like it isn't halfway told. It's even more than what people said it was. So I'd like to read just a couple verses to back that up. I'd like to go to 2 Chronicles, the 9th chapter, and notice the 22nd verse, I believe it is. 22nd and 23rd verse is just a couple books after 1 Kings. So let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 9 and verse 22. He says here, and King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. He passed them all. He had more than they had. And verse 23 says, and all the kings of earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. Now, just as a illustration, I've never found public speaking to be very monetarily profitable. But there's people out there that folks will pay big money to hear them talk. And there were people that were clamoring for a ticket, if you will, for admittance to be able to come and hear what Solomon had to say. Just to sit in his presence and hear something he might say, and you might say, oh, there's somebody you know. Maybe you hear him on the radio, and you find out that their main business is giving advice, giving counsel. Well, Solomon was sought after because of his wisdom, and because everybody esteemed him to be so great and so influential. And in 1 Kings, the 4th chapter, I want to notice here, that's backing up a little bit in the Bible. Kings is just before Chronicles, so we'll back up to the 4th chapter of 1 Kings. And we notice here, beginning in verse 29, it says, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman and Chalcol and Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Now, I don't know if somebody was taking notes while he was speaking proverbs. A lot of times people clamor for some little notes and stuff that people that are renowned for wisdom have written down. I have a few notes that someone that I have a lot of respect for, he wrote some personal notes down, just for himself. They weren't ever published in a book or anything. Typed them up on an old manual typewriter, I think. And he shared them with me, gave them to me before he passed. And it's interesting to get some insight from time to time of what someone else that you have a lot of appreciation for, what their perspective was, maybe on a verse in the Bible and maybe on something else. But Solomon was extraordinarily wise. He had a lot of perception. But discernment is more than intelligence, and it's more than wisdom. And I'd like for that to resonate with us today. I'd like for us to be able to take that home. Discernment is more than intelligence and wisdom. Because if we took a survey today, not just of us here, but abroad, it's going to be a very small percentage of people that thinks of themselves as being wise. There's some out there that think they're pretty sharp. But there's a lot of people that say, oh, I don't feel like I know as much as I should know. There's a lot of people like that. And their discernment is beyond just a number, a bunch of facts. Discernment is more than just understanding how things work and the ability to be able to explain what makes the lights come on or what makes the water come out the faucet and all of those kind of things. I'd like to read a verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 1. And I find the fulfillment of this verse in the life of Solomon. He says 13 and 1 of 1 Corinthians over here in the New Testament. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, that sounds like a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not charity, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. What do you see when you look on the life of Solomon? How did it end? If it would have ended like it started out, if he'd have ended his reign like he started, I believe that Rehoboam would have been a different man. I believe his son had been. I believe he had had some more descendants. I believe we'd have been able to read down through the scripture about those that were the descendants of Solomon and how wisdom and discernment followed. Abilities that Solomon had, it would have been something that would have trickled down. But we don't read that. It seemed like when Solomon passed off the scene, that it was like Israel was on a crash course to destruction. He had such an opportunity, and yet he made so many bad choices. He made so many. He was the wisest man that ever lived. The scripture we read said he'd have more wisdom than anybody before him and anybody after. We read that in the first passage that we read there. And yet, Solomon ended up in a place of being spiritual destitute. That's what it seemed like. Discernment. It's more than wisdom. Surely, if Solomon would have had discernment, he wouldn't have made as many bad choices as he did. He had the intelligence. He had the wisdom. He knew how to find out who the child belonged to. You remember that story. He knew how to negotiate business deals and transactions, and he knew how to tell someone else how things worked. And he could explain a lot of stuff, but he didn't have much discernment. He did not discern that the choices he was making was going to bring him down to a path of destruction. And yet, that's what the record tells us. I'd like to turn now to the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. And I would like to look in chapter 5. Because I want to tell you today that I feel like you and I need discernment. And whether we could all take an IQ test and say, oh, well, we're above whatever. We're all extremely intelligent. Or we're in the middle of the road and maybe we would be on the lower end of the scale. I want to tell you that we can have discernment and not have the highest IQ score. All right? We can still have discernment. And I don't, to me it's not important, and I'm not preaching to you about getting education, although I don't have a problem with education when it enhances our abilities to perform in this world. But I want to tell you, the thing that I want to promote is cultivating discernment. Because I don't want us to make bad choices and end up like somebody that had everything. He had it all. And he ended up making some terrible choices in life. I'd like to look at Hebrews, the 5th chapter. I'll begin reading in verse 11. He says, maybe verse 10. He's talking about Christ here. He says, called of God and high priest after the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. For when the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as are need, have need of milk and not of strong meat. Someone that has not developed in the way that we should develop says, for everyone that uses milk, and I like milk, okay, is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. There's a level of understanding that we expect children to have or not have. Matthew doesn't understand that it could be dangerous to walk under a tree trunk held up by a front end loader. I know that. His daddy knows that. And we tell him, Matthew, don't do that. We don't explain to him how a hydraulic hose could break prematurely. We don't explain to him how the log could shift. We just say, don't do that. But somewhere along the line, he needs to be able to understand why it's dangerous. And we need to understand, we need to gain understanding, and we need to have cultivate discernment. This could be hazardous to my walk with the Lord or to my physical life. He said in verse 14, but strong meat belongeth to them that are full age, even those who by reason of use have exercised their senses to discern both good and evil. So, strong meat. Something that would sustain you for a long period of time. There's a reason that a small baby gets hungry often. One is because they're living on milk. Another is their little stomach doesn't hold very much. They need the milk. They need the all-in-one food source that gives them energy and gives them strength and starts getting them up to speed, so to speak. But somewhere along the line, we need some meat. All winter, I've heated my house. I heat with wood, and all winter, I've heated with what I would call junk wood. I've cut up dead trees. Some of them were partially rotted. Sometimes I cut up some stuff that you could like throw like a football. It was so light. And I know if you pick up a piece of wood that's really light, there's not much heat in it. The heavier the wood, the more heat that's in there. I'm not the wisest person. I just got that much figured out. So if you got a piece of hedge, you ever picked up a piece of hedge? It's heavy. You can put a piece of hedge in and it'll burn a long time. There's a lot of heat in that stick of wood. You pick up a piece of pine and it'll make a hot fire for a short period of time, but it won't last very long. It's kind of like milk. We need some hedge wood, so to speak. We need something that'll give us energy and strength down the road and help us to be able, if I was just drinking milk and going to my job, I'd need milk several times during the day. You would too. But if we eat something substantial, it'll keep us going from morning to noon and noon to evening. And he says here, they that are full age, even those that who by reason of use have exercised their senses, what does our senses do but give us perception of things? I ask those that bring their cars to us, if you got a symptom, tell me what you see, tell me what you hear, tell me what you feel, tell me what you smell. Be careful about tasting stuff. But tell me what you see. Tell me what you hear. Those senses help give me clues. Don't come in and say, the motor's bad. Let me make that determination. Why do you think it's bad? Tell me what the symptom is. Do you hear a noise? Then try to describe the noise to me. Do you see some smoke? Well, tell me what color it is. That'll help me. But exercise your senses, it says, to discern good and evil. So as a Christian, we must get some strength in us from the Scriptures and be able to use that to exercise our senses to be able to tell whether something is good or whether it's evil. It's not that I just know that I know all of the Scriptures. That's knowledge. And it's good to have knowledge. And it's good to be able to retain knowledge. And, you know, it's good to be able to have a photographic memory so you can look up in your head, so to speak, and maybe read the verses off the page. That'd be wonderful if I could do that. I can't, but I've known of people that seem like they could just go through the Scripture like that and then quote it to you, almost like a photographic memory. There is such a thing. I'm not there. But that doesn't make you have discernment. But when you exercise your senses and use them to be perceptive of is this good or evil, then what you're cultivating is discernment. When you get a hold of something and it helps you know the pattern or the path that unrighteousness is going on or righteousness is going on, and you exercise your senses to know what's good and what's evil, your discernment is accumulating to where it'll help you when something unknown comes along. Have you ever heard the expression, I smell a rat? You know what that means? It means something's not right here. I don't know what it is, but I smell a rat. You might figuratively smell a rat when you're going to buy a used car. You may pick up on a little something and say, nah, I don't think so. Please don't buy a used car just because it's shiny. And don't buy one just because the radio works good. It's not a very good assessment. Shiny paints and radios don't get you to your other destination. There could be a rat in there somewhere. And if you don't personally have the discernment to tell what's good and bad, take it to somebody that does. You know, there's things about construction that I really don't know. I just don't know any better. And if I'm going to make a big decision, I need to get somebody that can help me understand, that knows how to say. Now look, that, whether it's a crack or a method that the roof is put together, that'll cause you problems, friend. I need somebody with some discernment that can help me, discernment I don't have. So when we're walking with the Lord, get all the knowledge you can of the Scripture. Apply yourself, but exercise your senses so you can discern right and wrong. We don't want to end up like Solomon, wisest man that ever lived, richest king that ever lived, most glorious reign that probably could ever be imagined. And yet, how did he end up? In a bad state. The kingdom fell apart after Solomon. Let's go to Romans, the 8th chapter. And notice the 12th through the 16th verse. Romans chapter 8, beginning at verse 12. He says, therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye, through the Spirit, do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For ye have not received the spirit of adoption. Ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. Discernment, part of discernment, is knowing that our spirit and God's spirit is bearing witness that we are in fellowship. That's that personal relationship you hear me talk about from time to time. And we must, our discernment must start with being able to discern whether or not His Spirit is bearing witness with our spirit that we are the Son of God. It's important that we're able to discern that, because how else are we going to be able to tell good from evil if we can't tell whether or not our spirit and God's spirit is on the same page? Does that make sense? I'm not just trying to speak about this intellectually, although facts matter. Facts do matter. But ultimately, there may be some facts that I'm not aware of, and my spirit can still bear witness, or God's Spirit can bear witness with my spirit that I've been adopted. That's extremely important. If I don't have the discernment to know whether or not I'm truly saved and I have a relationship with the Lord, then how am I going to have discernment as to whether something is good or evil? We have to exercise those senses. We have to cultivate them. And we have to know, Lord, would you really be pleased with this or not? Discernment is a blend, if you'll let me say it that way. It's a blend of being led by the Holy Spirit and God's Word. Knowing this is the way. You remember the prophet that seen all those manifestations of great power, the fire and the earthquake and all of that. And then after it all, he was not convinced that any of that was God trying to speak to him, although it may have been the power of God that caused all of those things. You agree? It's probably God's power that made the fire break out. It's probably God's power that caused the earthquake. It's probably God's power that done all of those things. But he was not satisfied. This is discernment. He wasn't satisfied with any of that as being what was a message for action until it all got quiet and he heard the still small voice. That's when he knew, this is what the Lord, this is the Lord talking to me. This is something that I can take action on. This is where discernment is. Discernment, it may be a big show. It may be a lot of demonstration. Surely, they have to be pleasing to the Lord. Look at the manifestation. Look at the people. Look at the money. Look at the whatever it is. It looks like that has to be. If it wasn't God blessing that, then it wouldn't be like that. You can hear statements like that. We need to exercise our senses. And we need to be able to know, is this really God? We need to be like the prophet. Lord, I need some confirmation here. It looks like a big demonstration. I need discernment. Just because you run into somebody that's wise, and they might have a lot of knowledge, doesn't mean they'll have discernment. Wisdom won't keep you from making bad choices. Remember that. Discernment will, if you'll listen to it. Wisdom will help, but wisdom won't keep you, knowledge won't keep you from making a bad choice. I would like to close with a verse in Ecclesiastes, or not Ecclesiastes, in Ezekiel, in the Old Testament. Ezekiel was a man that was most likely a contemporary with Daniel. He was a captive. The man that I believe God spoke to. He wrote a lot of stuff he said down, or a lot of the things that he witnessed in his mind, he wrote them down for us. I'd like to begin at the first verse. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, how did he know it was the voice of the Lord? Discernment. He knew it was the Lord speaking to him. I don't know all the details. I'm just telling you that Ezekiel was in a place that he knew that it was the Lord. Ezekiel chapter 33 and verse 1. Son of man, speak to the children of thy people and say unto them, when I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their coast and set him for their watchman, and when he seeth the sword come upon the land, he blow the trumpet and warn the people. Then whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and taketh not warning, if the sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet and took not warning, and his blood shall be upon him. But he that taketh warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman see the sword come and blow not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and it take any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So he give an illustration here, Ezekiel did, of, so you need to advise the people to set up a watchman. Get you an alarm system. And this alarm system, the whole point of the alarm system is that it would detect infiltration by the enemy. And when the enemy begins to infiltrate your territory, then the watchman's function is to sound a trumpet. I don't know what he's supposed to play. I don't know what the melody was. I don't know how long he's supposed to play, but it was some kind of signal. That's what a trumpet primarily was used for in the Old Testament, is a signal. You're supposed to give the message, and the message was to tell the people the enemy is coming in. Might be one, it might be 100, but be warned the enemy is coming. And when the enemy is coming, take the necessary precautions. Lock the doors. Turn out the lights. You know, during World War II, there was something called an air raid siren. You know what that was? siren went off, kind of like a tornado siren today. Everybody knew, turn out all the lights. No lights. This was back before heat-sensitive radar stuff, and they turned the lights out, so if there was an enemy flying over to with the intent of doing destruction, they couldn't see where to drop it, the bomb, in the night. That's what an air raid siren was for. And in the United States, we practiced that. They had drills. They gave educated people. But they were depending on the air raid siren, and when it went off, everybody if you had a light, a candle going so you could have a little night light or a little electric light on during that time of our history, you turned it out. Totally black, so the enemy couldn't see. There's something that was done in precaution, but if you left your light on and the enemy dropped a bomb and blowed your house up, it's your responsibility. Okay? That's the illustration he gives here. Now listen what he says. Now Ezekiel is saying, this is what the Lord told me. It's not just an illustration. It's not just an example. He said, so thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman into the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word of my mouth and warn them from me. When I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die. If thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at his hand. Nevertheless, if thou warn the wicked of his way to turn from it, if he do not turn from his way, he will die in his iniquity. But he's going to require something out of the watchman. But thou hast delivered thy soul, is how he ended that. But if you didn't warn him, then you're going to be guilty. Discernment. You think it's important? I think it's important. You know, I look on and I see developments that happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and I've lived long enough to see them come to really blossom. And what I see is that someone didn't have discernment. And when they didn't have discernment, there's been damage done. And the damage that's been done, somebody is going to be held accountable. And it makes me fearful. It makes me fearful for those that may have been in spiritual leadership. I want us all to have discernment. I want every one of you to exercise your senses. I want you to start out by knowing that you have a personal relationship with the Lord. Know that, yes, I have confessed, I have repented, I have felt the witness of His Spirit with my spirit that I'm His child. And I want you to recognize that discernment is more. I can speak with the tongues of men and angels. And if I don't have charity, if I don't have the real love of God working in my heart, and I don't have the discernment I should have, I might as well be out here beating on a disc blade. It's not going to do anybody any good. I might as well be making some kind of awkward noise. I feel very responsible. And I want to have the discernment. And I want to pass it on. I don't want to live a pretty good life and realize I didn't have enough discernment to help each one of you in the congregation. So I end this message with a plea for your prayers that I'll have the discernment I need and not allow the enemy to be able to come in and do damage. Because the enemy can come in and he can lead people astray and cause confusion. And he can cause great havoc among his people. I've seen it happen. I've lived long enough to watch it develop. Sometimes it developed and I didn't know what was going on until later. I want us to be careful. I want you to have discernment. And I want to have discernment myself. Let's pray for one another. The Lord will keep us on the right path and be successful. You pray for me.